When a man wants a friend, he turns to the most unlikely of sources. But in his quest for companionship, has he actually doomed us all? And then we meet a husband and wife who are spending the night at an abandoned farmhouse. It was supposed to be a night of fun, of relaxing entertainment. But when a mysterious message flashed across their television screen, they knew things were gonna get weird. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. Your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. So first off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command is the last member of the Mule Crew. Everyone get on your feet and give it up for Eric. Woohoo! Woohoo! He's riding on in on a donkey, walking on into Dead Rabbit Radio Command. The Mule Crew, Liam, Cole, and Eric, they all came out to see me at the Oregon Ghost Conference. They had actually come out to see me at the previous Oregon Ghost Conference as well. Want to make sure I give them their shout-outs, because it's always awesome when I get to meet you guys in person. Eric, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't come to the live events, if you guys can't support the show financially, that's fine. It really, really is. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Okay, Eric, you ready to get started? Tie that mule up. He's not coming. Nah, that's kind of mean. Throw the mule in the back of the Hare hovercraft. Eric, I'm going to toss you the keys to the Hare hovercraft. We're going to leave behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Hover us all the way out to the woodshed. We're headed all the way out to a woodshed. We don't know exactly where this story took place. It could be in a woodshed. It could be in your woodshed. Could be where you live. You could have been the one to post this, and then you'll probably be equal parts embarrassed and horrified that the coming legion of doom that will swallow us all is all your fault. We're gonna head out to this woodshed. It's in the backyard of this house. We're about to meet a guy. Let's call him Walter. And one day he's sitting in his bedroom and he's like, why can't I do it? My calculations are all correct. I just don't understand why it's not working. And he has this giant chalkboard in his bedroom and it's like a picture of like a sexy woman and then a plus sign and then a picture of him and then equals and a big question mark. He's like, why won't this work? The math adds up. He goes, maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe, okay, he races the sexy woman and he draws a picture of a leprechaun. And he's like, he's like, oh, getting a little experimental here. I've never gone through a leprechaun phase in college, but, first time for anything. And he's looking at it and he goes, no, it still won't work. And he races the leprechaun. And he's trying to figure out all of these different variations. What he wants to do is create a tulpa. We've talked about tulpas a couple times on the show. I'll put those episodes in the show notes. Basically, we cover it every time it goes wrong. So you can probably figure out what's going on here. Tulpa is basically a thought form you bring to life. It's either self-induced schizophrenia or you're actually able to create life through your thoughts. You basically imagine, I'm really kind of dumbing it down here, but you imagine that something exists and you imagine it in such a real way that it exists and it can become a separate part of you. So sometimes people use these tulpas for companionship because you're never alone. You're never alone if it's coming from your brain. And you can do all sorts of things with these tulpas. Yes, even the thing you're thinking of, you're like, well, can you have sex with one? Yes, you can have sex with a tulpa. But you have to give it so much of your brain processing power. It's almost like the law of attraction on a, like, hyper-focused level. Or schizophrenia, right? You might actually be giving yourself a split personality because it does have all of those hallmarks. Something that doesn't exist, you're interacting with, you hear voices in your head, you're doing strange things because you're interacting with something that's not there. Tulpa. And what Walter's trying to do is create a tulpa. Some people do it for companionship. Some people do it to experiment just to see if it's possible. Some people do it to unlock hidden wisdom. All sorts of reasons. A lot of people bang them. Bang these tulpas. Walter is trying to figure out, I've tried creating a tulpa, all sorts of tulpas, and I can't get it to work because his roadblock is imagining something is alive. Like a fully articulate, voiced character. That's his stumbling block. It, basically, his mind is saying, well, that's not real. That's not real. You're making that up. You're daydreaming. That person doesn't really exist. So he comes to the conclusion, well, maybe what I should be doing is not imagining an animate person. He can't figure out this solution to his problem. And he's like, whatever, I'm just going to go downstairs and watch some cable. Do people still have cable? Do people still watch TBS? Walter's downstairs and he's flipping through the station and he comes across his channel and he sees Tom Hanks half naked walking around. Tom Hanks is walking around. And he's like, no, I'm on this island. Oh no, I've been cast away. And he's like, I remember this movie. And Tom Hanks is like eating coconuts and killing crabs. He's like, look at me. I'm the best version of Tom Hanks there is. I'm going to fight all the other Tom Hanks. You look out, Philadelphia, Tom Hanks. You're going down first. Tom Hanks is running around this island. And Walter's like, yeah, it's a pretty good movie. And then Tom Hanks has this volleyball. And he's like, Wilson, my best friend. Ah, come here. He's all giving it a noogie. Ah, come here, my buddy. Here, I'm going to feed you some crab meat. He's all shoving it into the volleyball's mouth. And Walter goes, wait a second. That's exactly what I need. I need an inanimate object. I need to find something that doesn't move, that isn't alive in any real sense of the word. That's what I'm going to use my tulpa building powers on. That's what I need to visualize. I need to visualize an inanimate object like Wilson. Walter goes, okay, so I need something that's inanimate. And he actually has the perfect thing. It just kind of pops in his head. In the woodshed. He opens the door to the woodshed. And there, laying on the ground, is his tulpa. Or a better sense of the word, the tulpa blueprint. It's a dead bird. And it's been in this woodshed for quite a while. Because he did post a photo of this online. A decaying, dusty bird. Who he names Hughart. Oh, Hughart, you will be the blueprint for my tulpa. He's holding his nose. He's like, pewee, tulpa, you sure are stinky. He's all brushing the maggots off of it. Nope, not imagining you, maggot. Hughart, or Hughart, maybe. That sounds... I don't think you would want to be like, I'm going to create a tulpa, and I'm going to name it Hurt. I want it to beat me up. I'm a sicko pervert. Hughart is probably what it is. Hughart, you dead bird, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful. I'm going to create a tulpa about you. And he does. He begins to visualize Hughart as the tulpa. He's now giving part of his brain processing power to imagining that this dead bird is always... I mean, listen, man, I'm not this guy. Wrong thing to choose. You're like, oh, this story's definitely not going to end well. He begins to visualize this dead bird is actually alive and can talk to him. He psychically brings it back to life. Or, like I've said multiple times, he's given himself schizophrenia. But instead of schizophrenia with, like, some hot girl dressed like a genie hanging out in the corner of your room, it's a dead bird. Like, laying on the ground. I don't know if it's floating around him. He's like, ah, disgusting. Dust is all falling on Walter's hair. He's like, ah. Almost immediately, you guys can guess, almost immediately, he realizes that Hugert does not like being dead. He's created this tulpa. It was much easier for him to visualize this inanimate object as his tulpa, but also almost immediately, it doesn't like being dead. So what happens is Walter pretty much loses his mind. And he's posting this online. He doesn't know what to do. He's created this tulpa of this bird, and now it's spread to all the birds in his neighborhood. He goes, at first it was pretty cool, because the birds spoke English to me. I'd be walking down a street, and I'd see a blue jay in a tree, and he'd be like, "What's up, Walter? Good job bringing the dead back to life." And I'm like, "Oh, thanks, blue jay," and blue jay flies away. And then you see a crow, and it's like, "Good evening, Walter. I hope you had fun eating those SpaghettiOs last night." And you're like, "What? I didn't eat SpaghettiOs. Did someone else create a tulpa? SpaghettiOs? No adult eats SpaghettiOs. Be gone, crow." And the crow's like, "Rawr, rawr, rawr." Walking down the street, there's a pigeon being like, Hey, buddy, you got any dead rats to feed me?" "I do. I got them right here. I got them from a woodshed. Nice and warm. Just for you." Yum, yum, yum. Birds were speaking English to him. Which would be cool. I talked about hidden knowledge, right? You could be like, "Birds, birds, what is going on? What's going on up in the sky?" And the birds are like, "Nothing, just a bunch of birds. You can look up. There's nothing up there." "Birds, do you ever see any UFOs?" And the mighty crow goes, "Sometimes." Like, that's not okay. Any more detail? "No." And talk to birds. But what's happened now, that would be alarming enough. Listen, man, if a meteorite came down and hit me in the head and I could communicate with animals, that'd be a blessing and a curse. Because it would be cool to talk to animals. I'd basically be like Snow White. I'd be running around just yelling in animals' faces. I'm like, "You squirrel, you, where are my nuts? I know you went into my house and took all my cashews." People are like, "What?" But then imagine like you're sitting on a park bench and you see, like, a family with the dog. And the dog looks at you and goes, "You gotta help me. They're gonna put me down. They're gonna take me to the vet. That's where we're walking. The vet's on the other side of the park. Dude, you gotta help me. I don't want to die. They just don't like big dogs. They just don't like big dogs like me." I'm like, "What would you do?" You get up, you're like, "Sir, I'll take your dog." He's like, "What? Well, I know you're gonna kill it." "How'd you know that?" So it'd be a blessing and a curse. You'd know what your cat really thought about you because your cat sees you naked all the time. Normally, you're naked and the cat just walks by. But imagine if you're naked and the cat goes, "Ew. Ew." It's gonna kind of hurt your self-confidence. You're like, "Oh man, you're taking you to the vet on the other side of the park later today." Birds are speaking English, but you can deal with that. It could be kind of fun. But now they're actually starting to speak in this weird chatter that he can't understand anymore. He said it was decent when they spoke English, but now he compared it to phone freaking. He compared it to this way that used to be able to hack the phone lines back in the day when we had like rotary phones or phone booths. You could play a certain tone over the phone and make free phone calls. You could call people for free. It would do this thing. And he goes, "No longer speak English. They speak..." Technically, I listen to a sample of phone freaking. It sounds like a faster bird speak. It's just like chirps and whistles. He goes, "That's all I can hear now. And I can't make any sense of what they're saying." And, you know, you go, "Well, okay, they're just sounding like birds again." He goes, "No, it's not just that." He goes, "Every time I go out for a walk, I always come across the dead bird. Walking down the street, he sees a bird on the sidewalk, dead. Go sits in the park, there's a pigeon, dead. He goes to the corn cob festival and he's eating corn cob and he sees this crow, dead. And he's like, oh, I wonder if that's the one that saw the UFO. You're checking him, see if all of his organs are there. Not a drop of blood in this bird. I think he was abducted by an alien. He also believes that the birds are spying on him. He goes, every time I'm outside, I'll see birds sitting on power lines looking at me. Or they'll be perched up on rooftops looking at me. Classic, really, schizophrenia. Like, he may have actually given himself schizophrenia. He may have created a duality in his brain by bringing life to Hugert. Or you're like chasing birds, hanging on power lines, buildings all the time. Maybe he's just becoming more and more paranoid. Maybe there is a mystical component to all of this. Maybe, you know, tulpas are one of those things that I have never really attempted to do because I think it's a very, very dangerous thing. I don't not do it because I think it's a waste of time. It's the same thing with Ouija boards, right? I think a Ouija board, it is a toy. It's made by Milton Bradley, but it's also a very dangerous toy. Like a Nerf gun that shoots out darts, not foam darts, but like bar darts. Still a toy, technically. It only shoots it out at, you know, 3 feet per second. But if you're standing within 2 feet, you're getting a dart in you. I don't use Ouija boards because I think they're dangerous and the pros do not outweigh the cons. The same thing with a tulpa. Like, I find it intriguing, but the pros do not outweigh the cons on this. But I also think that it could be, part of it could be spiritual, part of it could be a self-induced mental illness. And the answer could live somewhere there in the middle. He doesn't know what to do. And people were posting, I found this one on the X board. People were posting, well, that doesn't really sound like a tulpa. Sounds like you might have schizophrenia. You know, this is not super helpful. You're like, well, I hope you sleep well. And now he's trying to sleep. Birds are breaking into his bedroom. He's like, is this real? Is this real? As they're pecking his eyes out. He goes, it's real. And then he wakes up and it's not real. And he's like, oh, okay, that's cool. He still has mental trauma of feeling every little meaty part of his eyeball being eaten by birds. But I thought Walter's story was interesting because it does show the dangers of tulpas. And then I found something even odder than that. But it has the same start. What happens when you have the same origin story, but it goes off without a hitch, quote unquote? We'll see. Let's take a look. This other guy posted in this same post, the same thread. He goes, what happened is that I don't think you created a tulpa at all, and I definitely don't think you're crazy. I think that there was an energy living entity floating through the vastness of the universe and saw that you were lonely, saw that you wanted to create this, and it came to you. The problem is you're trying to brush away the feathers of this immortal lover. You're trying to say, go, ka, ka, somewhere else. Who? Said the owl. Not me, says you. Don't do any of that stuff. You're all super confused. Walter's like, huh? What? Did he say caca? No, you don't push away the energy being. In fact, let me tell you what I did. Not me. Joe, this guy, we'll call him Joe. He said, when I was a little boy, I was at a thrift store. And I saw a little figurine of Tiamat. Tiamat, most of what I know, people always think I'm a big old dummy. I'm totally fine with that. Most of what I know of Tiamat is from D&D. But also it is from Mesopotamia, according to Wikipedia. As I pull it up right now, it's like, oh, I can't talk about D&D. It's basically like, let's see what Wikipedia says. It's basically an elder deity who has something to do with water. Tiamat was the shining personification of the sea. And it was a woman. And he finds this figurine of Tiamat at a thrift store. Joe does. And he immediately starts to fall in love with it. He takes it home. Well, he buys it, right? He's not a sticky-fingered little boy. He takes it home. And he starts having dreams about Tiamat. He's this little boy. And he just sees an endless ocean. And he's like trying to dog paddle because he doesn't know how to swim yet. I wonder if you don't know how to swim in real life, but you start drowning in a dream, could you swim in the dream? Because I think we all have a natural, like if you take a person and you throw them in the water, most of the time they'll start swimming even if they don't know how to swim. I think I've never tested that one either. I wonder if you can swim in your dreams. But anyways, and he just feels enveloped by the warm ocean water as he's all peeing his bed. He's like, oh, Tiamat, you're the best. And he feels the icy touch of his underwater lover pulling him down. He's 18 in the dream. He's not a little kid. But anyways, he falls in love with Tiamat. And he believes that he's not just in love with this figurine or an imaginary thing. He says that he is married, now as an adult, he is married to Tiamat, the dragon goddess of the sea. And over the years, like, they're sitting there, and she's, like, complaining to him, of course, because she's his wife. Now he's like, oh, great. She's like, you won't believe what Zeus said last night. Oh, I hate his wife so much. We need to go over there. And you're like, oh, honey, listen, I know you have some pretty crazy friends. I don't know what you expect me to do against Aphrodite and her husband. Maybe you should just stop hanging out with him. No. You're such a weakling. He says that Tiamat was really, really sad that no one was worshiping her anymore. But she realized that Joe had such a passion for her that that's why she's hanging out with him. She goes, I'm not worshipped anymore. I used to be like the hottest goddess of the seven seas. People would sing sailor shanties about me. But nowadays, like, nobody even remembers me. They just think of that stupid D&D game. I'm more than just a figurine, a piece on a board. I'm a woman with womanly needs. No one wants to have sex with me anymore. I mean, it's so funny because, again, he found this as a kid. I don't know when she started having such adult conversations with him because there's a big difference. I guess it's grooming either way, but if she's sitting there and he's like, you know, younger, this is all really creepy. If he's overage, then it's just a demon goddess taking advantage of a mortal soul. She goes, no one wants to have sex with me anymore. No one wants to worship me, but you, I can tell how much you love me, Joe. I want to get married to you. Now he says, because he's talking to Walter, it sounds more like a humble brag. He's like, you're banging a dead bird. I'm banging a Mesopotamian goddess. He goes, but listen, in all seriousness, if you want to get rid of this bird tulpa, because he goes, remember he says it's an energy being that was kind of like floating around and attached to Walter. He goes, what you need to do is you need to set up a bunch of things in your house that are effective at absorbing electricity or absorbing radio signals. These trap weak energy beings. Any sort of life form that's made out of pure energy, they'll actually get distracted by things that are good at absorbing. You're like, what are those? I was like, I don't know either. He doesn't give an example. He goes, get something that absorbs electricity or absorbs radio waves, and it will trap the spirit that's around you. They'll get stuck. And then you take the item and you throw it away. He doesn't tell me. It would have been really helpful if he included an Amazon link. But he says, just get something like that, you'll take care of it. And he does say that, he ends it like this. He goes, you don't have to trust me if you don't want to. I don't care. I just know I'll soon have a physical manifestation of my loving wife, Tiamat. Like, that's not good. Might work out fine for him. But imagine if he's right. Imagine if, out of all the craziness we cover on this show, he's 100% telling the truth. He's not deluded. He's right. He actually did find a figurine of Tiamat. and she is slowly becoming real in our world until eventually the process will be complete. And one day you'll be sitting at your house, you're watching Castaway on TBS, and all of a sudden it's like special news break. It's like, we have a special news break in downtown Illinois. A 700-foot wave has appeared. A dragon woman and what appears to be an 18-year-old young man are destroying the city. It's mostly the dragon. Young man is just laughing on its shoulder. Please stay out of the Chicago area forever. We don't think we'll be able to handle this. Now back to your regularly scheduled program. What if he's right? What if they, one of these days, we will wake up and there will be a dragon goddess crushing cities? It would be pretty dope, honestly. I'm not going to lie. As long as it wasn't my city, I was like, well, you know, Chicago. Sorry, guys. Like, imagine watching the news and there's a giant monster, like, stomping all over the place. That'd be pretty dope. Eric, let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world-famous Carbonicopter. We are leaving behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Why don't you fly us all the way out to a farmhouse? Before we go out there, I want to give a really, really quick Dead Rabbit Radio recommends. It's a movie I've watched twice, which is rare for me. And I watched it the second time because one day I was sitting there and I was just like, that movie was so good, I want to check it out again. It had been years since I'd seen it. I've actually recorded Dead Rabbit Radio Recommends for it over the years, and for whatever reason, they get edited out. I want to make sure it gets in here. It's a movie called Yellow Brick Road. And it was directed by Andy Mitten and Jesse Holland. It's actually kind of hard to explain. That's probably why I normally cut this part for time, because it can go on a bit. But it's basically a group of filmmakers. It's kind of found footage. It's an interesting mix. A group of filmmakers hear of this urban legend that back in the 1930s, everyone in this small town, one day, they're all watching The Wizard of Oz at the movie theater. They all got up and they walked out of the movie theater and they walked down this path and were never seen again. And it's this old legend, and this group of filmmakers, they come to this town and they want to do a movie on it. They want to do like a documentary about Yellow Brick Road, which is what this path is called. The movie's unsettling. Like, I think that's why I wanted to watch it again, because I had watched it once, I knew nothing about it, and I really enjoyed it. It's really unsettling. And then it was years later, and I was like, what? Why did that movie creep me out so much? Why do I keep remembering parts of that movie, certain visuals in that movie? I'm going to watch it again. So I, you know, went on Amazon or wherever I got it, and I watched it again, and it was just as unsettling the second time, years later, as it was the first time. The movie still left me... these two guys, they've directed other movies, and I'll talk about those movies in upcoming Dead Rabbit Radio Recommends, because they got some really outstanding stuff. This was, I believe, their first movie together. It's everything from the cinematography to the isolation of the characters to the events that are going on. It's just an unsettling film. And that's really hard to pull off when you have an attractive cast of actors and you have... The movie's not necessarily super low budget. It's not like Gateway Meat or anything like that. But it's unsettling in a way like Gateway Meat or Gateway Flesh, whatever that movie's called. I don't know if I ever did a Dead Rabbit Radio Recommends on that. I talk about it all the time. I recommend it. Not Gateway Meat, but Yellow Brick Road. Dead Rabbit Radio Recommends Yellow Brick Road. I think it's on most streamers at this point. You might even be able to see it for free. On Freebie, but I really liked it, and it is just distressing, I guess is a good way to put it. They do some really cool elements in that movie. Really, really enjoy it. So if you're looking for something to watch, if you're looking for something to watch that'll stress you out, raise your blood pressure, Dead Rabbit Radio recommends Yellow Brick Road. It's all one word, Yellow Brick Road. We're headed all the way out to Indiana. Specifically, we're in French Lick, Indiana. It's kind of a disgusting name for a city, if you ask me. French Lick. Maybe Lick means something different in France. Maybe that means like city. So you're like, where are you going today? Oh, I'm headed into the Lick. You're like, what? Like, I know that means city in our language. Still gross. French Lick, Indiana. The year is 2022. Eric is landing this carbonar copter, and we see this old farmhouse on an old farm. And we see a car pull up. We roll the windows up. Take the key out of the ignition. They open the doors, and out steps Mark and Lisa. We don't have their real names. Mark and Lisa are a married couple. They were actually headed home after watching a movie in the Big Lick in the big city. They're headed home. But Mark was getting tired and he goes, hey, why don't we stop at the old farmhouse? Why don't we spend the night there? We'll head home in the morning. This farmhouse is where Mark grew up. He grew up on the farm. And after his mother died, he just kind of left the house the way that it was. He wasn't living in it. He wasn't renting it out. You know, eventually you're going to do something with it. But right now, you know, just leave it as it is. So they walk into the house and they turn on the lights, and it is just exactly like he remembers. Fires up the television. From what I understand in the story, this is one of those old televisions that had like the knob. So you had a set amount of channels built into the TV. Like when I was a kid, you had, what was it, like 15 VHF and 58 or 60 UHF. So the knobs had a limit. You could go so far in one direction, like a mechanical limit as well. It was only made to go so far in one direction. So since Harry fires up the television set, they're watching this movie when all of a sudden a commercial starts. You know, we're used to those now. A commercial's going. And then an image appears on top of the commercial. Image might not be the right word. Lettering appears. A message appears on top of the commercial. It says, greetings, Earthlings. And the commercial's continuing to play, but this text is on top of it. And Lisa goes, what is that? And Mark's like, I don't know. I don't know what that is. She goes, is this part of the commercial? He goes, no, we see this commercial all the time. It's never done that before. He walks over to the television and he starts to change the channel. And he changes the channel. They're on a different network, but the message is still there. Greetings, Earthlings. And he begins to click through all of the stations in one direction, and then he goes back to all the stations in the other direction. And the entire time, this message is still on the screen. Greetings, Earthlings. That's when Mark hears something coming from within the television set. Not physically something in there, but it's like coming from the volume of a television show. He's hearing it originate from the TV. He hears a voice say, hey, get that off. Take it off. And the message disappears. Lisa hears it as well, and she's completely freaked out by this. There's not, I mean, basically, if something says greetings, Earthlings, you're going to assume it's aliens. You kind of have to be kind of adult to not think that. Angels and demons don't refer to us so much as Earthlings. You know, cryptids don't talk that much. You'd think it was going to be alien. Also, this might be the house that Mark grew up in. Lisa, this is just an old abandoned house that just has some nice furnishings in it. She doesn't feel comfortable here. They should be at home. They're at this old farmhouse and this old farm. And Mark is kind of laughing it off. Mark says, well, honey, listen, if it is aliens, But probably not. There's probably some rational explanation for this. If it is aliens, they're going to be nice. I mean, they said greetings, right? I mean, like, if they were evil aliens, would they say it like that? And there's not aliens. It's not aliens anyways. So quit thinking about aliens. Now let's sit down and watch the movie Aliens. He's trying to calm her down. And, you know, it works a little bit. Eventually, it's time to go to bed, so they go up to Mark's old bedroom. Which I'm assuming probably like a twin-sized bed in it, shaped like a race car. They go up to his old bedroom, and they fall asleep. But Mark's only asleep for a couple hours. Wakes up, and he's kind of like, what? What time is it? He looks over at his watch, sitting on the little nightstand. He looks over and it's 3:03. He's like, what? Oh my god, why am I awake so early? Oh, and he looks. And coming in through his bedroom window is this bright light shining through. Laying in bed and he's kind of angling his head. He's trying to get a better look out the window. He's like, what in the world is that? He gets out of bed, and he notices that the way that the light is moving, the way that everything's kind of playing out, is that the light is ascending. The source of the illumination is actually flying up into the air, and it's causing the light to kind of move in his room as well, as the dimensions, as the angles, everything changes. Mark begins to walk towards the window. And at this point, the light is enveloping him. And he's continuing to walk towards the window when he hears Lisa scream, "Come back!" Mark wakes up. He's like, what in the world? It's daylight. He looks over, Lisa's not in bed. He looks at his watch that's sitting on the nightstand, or at this point, day stand. He looks at it, it's 8:03. He's like, what in the world was that? That was a weird dream. And as he's still kind of figuring everything out, Lisa comes barreling through the bedroom door. Where have you been? Where have you been? Lisa starts saying. Where were you, Mark? Where did you go? Lisa tells Mark, she goes, after she calms down and stops sweating profusely, she said, it was late at night, I don't know what time it was, but you woke up and that woke me up, and there was that light coming in through the bedroom window, and you walked towards the light, and you began walking towards the window. And I knew something was wrong, and I screamed out, come back! And while I was yelling, you walked through the wall. You just phased right through the wall, right through the window. You disappeared into the light, and you vanished. I got up, I started looking for you, looked out the window, nothing's there, there's no bright light. I don't see even how you could have walked through the wall. I'm starting to think, you have to be here somewhere. She goes, I checked the entire house. I'm walking around. I probably should have checked outside. Didn't really want to go out there, but I'm looking all over the house for you. She said, and then I guess I lost track of time. Something happened, and I don't remember what. I remember looking for you, and then the next thing I remember, I'm waking up on the couch downstairs. I wake up, and that's when I hear a loud whooshing sound coming from your bedroom. Oof. So I ran up to the bedroom and opened the door, and there you are laying in bed. This was posted online. I found this story on phantomsandmonsters.com. It's a great website as far as all of this paranormal activity goes, things like that. I mean, this would definitely fall in a alien. I think it hits most of those things. They call us Earthlings, Ascending Light, people disappearing. Now, you know, Mark, again, those aren't his real names, Mark and Lisa, but Mark said, we don't have any idea what happened. We have no idea what happened. We did, you know, think that, like, maybe we were abducted by aliens, but we didn't have any marks on our bodies, no signs of, like, experimentation. Very classic UFOlogy stuff. We'll get into that in a second, but there's no signs or marks on our bodies. No residual memories. You know, that happened back in 2022. It's not like every so often we'll see, you know, a gray alien in the media. We're watching Family Guy or we're watching X-Files or whatever, and we start to have flashbacks. So they're using those. I mean, those are very typical in older alien encounters, finding bizarre marks on your body. I don't see so many of those accounts these days. They still happen from time to time, but in the 80s and the 90s, that was like one of the main things that you realized you were abducted. You would have lost time and you would have strange marks on your body. I think the aliens have probably gotten better at hiding these incision points. They do pop up from time to time. They don't never happen, but they seem to be more rare than they used to be. But they go, you know, Mark's like, I don't know if we were abducted. I never really believed in alien abduction, but now I'm wondering if something like that happened. I think this is one of those stories that I think it's fair to say, yeah, it's probably what happened. You, both of you, were probably abducted by aliens. And it's really interesting that they're, you, like, if I, you know, it's obviously it's their choice. If I was in this type of situation, I would probably, well, again, you know, I'm kind of going back and forth. Would I go to get, if I was in a situation this vivid with another person, would I go get hypnotized? Regression hypnotism type of thing. Hidden memories pulled to the surface. Would you do that? Would I do that? If I just woke up in the middle of the night and I had a crazy dream and I thought that aliens abducted me, I may not pay, you know, $300 to find out that I was just dreaming. Unless it was really affecting my mental health and I go, I need to get an answer to this. But if it was me and another person, I think I would, just out of curiosity, go, well, you know, I will pay $300 to get hypnotized and figure out what happened then. But, you know, like we began this story, like, is there the pros outweighing the cons? He goes, we have zero negative events, negative responses, negative memories from this, right? We don't have any surgery scars. We don't have any nightmares about this happening. We don't freak out when we see aliens in the media. You could open up yourself to those memories if you knew what actually happened. So what would you do? I think that we talked about this on a past episode pretty recently. The aliens wiping our mind, they could be doing us a favor. It may not be them trying to cover up their own existence. They may know we're going to do you a favor. We don't want you to remember this. Well, it does help us maintain, you know, our secrecy, but also you don't want to remember it either. If the fact is we're going to do stuff to you that's so horrible, you don't want to remember it. We're actually doing you a favor. But if you had an experience like this, would you be willing to undergo hypnosis to actually find out the truth about what happened at that farmhouse? It's a terrifying story with a terrifying twist, the idea of these aliens inadvertently broadcasting a message first. You know, really, that's what throws the whole story into high strangeness. Everything else is a typical alien abduction. It's the fact that, one, you had the message appear on the television set. Like, what was that? Then you had the voice saying, get it off. So that means that they weren't even supposed to be broadcasting that in the first place. And the fact that it spoke like that, that the people could hear it, wasn't telepathic, which almost, I shouldn't say 100%, but, you know, that really makes it so this probably wasn't a gray alien abduction. This was another type of alien that speaks. Most gray aliens use telepathy, and the humans involved in the story describe it as telepathy. They heard this voice with their ears. So what was going on with that? It really does make the story even stranger. I wonder if this farmhouse is still there. I mean, this story only took place 2 years ago. It's definitely possible that this farmhouse is still there with that old television set. But I think the aliens have probably moved on. That might have been a perfect night to swing by this old abandoned farmhouse when these people were out there and to do what aliens do, to study humans physically, mentally, and psychically. I think the aliens have moved on, but I don't think the aliens have gone back home. If anything, they are continuing their experimentation here on Earth. And I believe that if aliens can abduct you and perfectly wipe your memory, like I said, one, that could be a good thing because you don't remember it. I think, two, you are now a prime candidate for future abductions. They're going to refine their technique each time when they're abducting you. Make sure you don't wake up. Like, why did he wake up? How do we prevent that? How do we prevent the message from appearing? I don't think this story's over for Mark and Lisa. Based on past statements from UFO abductees, the story is just beginning. When you're abducted by an alien, it's never, wow, that was a crazy night. It'll never happen again. History tells us that once you're successfully abducted, it will happen again, over and over and over again. Mark and Lisa may think that this is just a crazy story that they experienced at an abandoned farmhouse one night. But the story is just beginning for these two. They don't realize it. They don't even remember it. That abduction or other abductions that may have already taken place. They don't realize they're part of this saga now. The story of aliens visiting Earth and using us as science experiments. Mark may not believe in alien abductions, but that may be what makes him such an ideal specimen for the aliens to abduct. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be your email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.